Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today's conversation focuses on something every family governed business eventually faces. How do we evolve under a founder built firm into a next generation enterprise without losing trust, culture, or reputation along the way? I'm joined today by Mitch Sharp and Jenny Sharp of the Sharp Group. Mitch is a CPA, entrepreneur, and longtime advisor to business owners across New Jersey. After building SKC & Co. over four decades into a highly respected firm, he launched the Sharp Group with a fresh vision around strategic growth, tax planning, and advisory services. Jenny, also a CPA, represents the next generation of leadership. With a collaborative, solution-oriented style, she works closely with entrepreneurs and business owners to help them align business strategy with personal financial goals. Together, they are not just serving family businesses, they are one. Mitch, Jenny, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Yes, thank you for having us, Ed.
Thank you.
Great to be with you. So let me ask you this first, Mitch. After four decades of building your initial firm, what made you decide it was time to launch the Sharp Group and begin this new chapter?
I think there was a couple of things. One was that Jenny was hired by the firm as I was selling my interest. And as she was working and I was working at the firm, we sort of recognized that our culture was different. The culture of the new owners, while just fine and their quality firm, I think the old SKC was really a unicorn, frankly. And I think we were finding that that was not being really supported by the firm. And again, not anything to say with criticism, because I think they're a good firm. It's just that my vision was always different, always was. And the interesting thing is Jenny just, it was just like she gravitated right toward that, that service model. And we kind of recognize that, you know, we would like to do things the way, you know, the old firm used to do it. Again, no judgment, just that this is what, this is our passion. And part of the reason that I said, all right, here we go again, kind of thing, because I wasn't exactly young at the time. This is 2 years ago. I saw that Jenny had the passion for it. That was the deciding factor, really.
Nice. And put some color on that. What gave the original firm and some of your influence on it that, as you put it, unicorn status? What made it special?
I think there's a couple of things. One is, and I use the word, the words that I seem to be using lately to describe it is passion and commitment.
Okay.
I don't use those words lightly. And what I mean, don't use it lightly, as we're hiring people, the language that I'm using with the people is, don't come here if you don't have the passion to serve clients. Don't come here, because you're not just going to be sitting at your cubicle, you know, doing data input and tax returns. And what that looks like is, you know, we are very, very deep relationships with our clients. So that most of our clients, we have monthly contact, monthly closings. Some, a lot of them are on site. Some of them, if they're farther away, we're doing virtually. But the whole idea is a lot of small businesses have no idea what their numbers are. So we start there. We say every month you're going to have meaningful data, and we're going to trend that data. And then we're going to take that, do a little analysis each month, and then we're going to talk about what's going on. And that's really where things start happening. When we talk about what's going on, we see a trend in something and say, well, what's going on here? And that leads to all other kinds of things. I just finished a meeting where the owner of the company came to me and said, I think I need to hire a CEO. Because my real passion is the original skill set that I had
Okay.
technically. And the business has mushroomed, and he's saying to CEO stuff, I don't really want to do this long term. So when he said that, I said, okay, let's get together and talk about it. So we just spent 2.5 hours doing a deep dive. And I've got my marching orders, which is to do a meaningful recap, put together the steps that need to be taken, and to help him execute. So that's just, a half hour ago or so. So that's one thing. And then there's, a lot more routine things like, hey, how come your sales intake is so high the last 2 months? What are you doing different? Well, we really don't know. And then, well, let's talk about what are we doing. And then we uncover something. Oh, that's, yeah, we're doing that different. We got to keep doing that. Because a lot of times what happens, people do things somewhat by accident. What we want to do is we want to catch them doing something good and then institutionalize it. Do a lot of that, as well as looking at, oh, this trend's not so good. We got to find causality, figure it out, and make the appropriate changes. So the dial is just constant, and it's like, oh, it can be everything from, the tax planning is real time. A lot of times when people are having good years, we're talking to them early about things like cash balance plans, and we always hear, hey, nobody ever talked to us about that, so it's a whole different level of relationship.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, that sounds like far more substantive than what we expect. And you're talking to somebody that I've been looking at P&Ls and formal financial statements since I was 22 years old. Like, and it baffles me that some businesses run without that. They're just running kind of eyeballing their bank account, if you will, and at a fairly large size. And I'm just like,
Yes,
that feels a lot
and
like kind of going to work naked, for to
he's
me,
ran into a few more very substantial companies who, fortunately got referred to us. And when we took a look to do the startup, we realized, well, they kind of sort of have a set of books, but not really. And these are not small companies.
No, that's what's always shocking,
Yes.
Jenny, let me turn to you now. So, you probably kind of grew up around your dad's previous firm. So, did you always envision yourself eventually going this path, or had you contemplated other paths in terms of starting your career?
Yeah, so ironically enough, I guess, well, not really ironically, but no, I didn't. When I first was in high school, starting out high school, I thought I was going to become like a doctor and then be in the medical field. I really liked science. I was really good at math. And to be fully transparent, I didn't know what my dad did. I knew accounting. When I would tell people, I was like, oh, he does people's taxes. That's like literally what I would tell people. Verbatim. And then what happened was I took an elective in high school, accounting class, and my dad came in to be a guest speaker. So in front of the class, and I was older, I learned what he actually did. And I was like, oh, this is not just doing taxes. This is not just you have to be good at math. This is so much else. This is you have to be good with, dealing with people and talking to different clients with different personalities. You have to be a great problem solver. You have to think on your feet, be creative, come up with some, really strategic plans for growth or for tax savings. So it's more than just I do taxes. So I learned that in high school after that class, and then quickly made a decision to switch. So when I realized, this sounds horrible, being a doctor, it's a lot. If you get something wrong being a doctor, that's someone's health. Whereas if you get something wrong doing accounting, yeah, maybe worst case scenario, you have to amend a tax return, you know? So when I realized the risk, different type of risk, I was like, I think I'm going to go into accounting. And then I started off undeclared because I know I wanted to do accounting, but Mitch was like, I want you to really make sure you want to do it, not just because of me, not because of anyone else. And my first year in college, I got an A plus in the class. It just made sense. It clicked. And ever since then, I haven't looked back. So,
See what you did, Mitch? You went in and gave a talk, and the next thing you know, you got yourself a business partner. How about that?
What do they call it? Unintended consequences?
So you've been at the Sharpe Group now for a couple of years. At what point or what was the moment when it started to feel like you were really truly professional partners and not just father-daughter team? Like, when did it start to click that, hey, this is our business and we're in business? Go ahead, Jenny.
I would say probably last at the end of last tax season, at least for me. I can't speak for Mitch, but when we started, obviously Mitch has done this, so this isn't his first rodeo. Like he set up a accounting firm from scratch. So obviously in the beginning, I really heavily relied on him and his expertise and his experience. Day one, it was literally just me and Mitch, you know, as the only two employees, and then we, you know, grew from there. But it wasn't until I would say next year, or sorry, last year, that we switched the reins. I started getting more involved in terms of the management of the company, in terms of, you know, managing the different staff and our team members, and really starting to take accountability and responsibility for, you know, other types of things like the financials of the firm. Obviously, Mitch is a great consultant and a great has a He has decades worth of experience. He's done this before. So I feel like we're a really great partnership. And, you know, that's how I would, at least for me, I would say last year was when I felt the switch.
Nice. And Mitch, for you, what if you could share, what's been the biggest like personal shift in now sharing leadership, not with partners, but with your daughter?
I found that I'm very comfortable sharing the leadership. To be honest with you, our challenge, and I guess, we're fortunate. Our real challenge has been, how do we manage this thing where, Jenny's new at the management level, and we started with 2 to 4 people 2 years ago, and now we're hiring our 12th or 13th person. And the real challenge is, how do you pace this transition so that it works? Because, there's been so much thrown at her. We intended to grow, but we didn't intend to be a dozen people 2 to 2.5 years in, because we really started with, well, essentially 2 people. So it's been a challenge. Jenny, her and I both were spread fairly thin because of the growth. The intention this year is we already have plans to hire 3 people.
Excellent.
And so the transition itself, I would have loved to say that we were able to plan it and everything went according to plan and all that. But we probably thought that we would have a firm of about 6 to 8 people right now, and we're going on 12 or 13 or whatever when it's all done. And so that put Jenny in a position to have to learn a lot real fast, and I just try to support. I don't have any issues with letting go. And I think 2 reasons, I guess. One is I did it for a real long time. All right, that's been there, done that. The second is she has the patient, the passion and the values to do it right. So I don't have to lose sleep over that.
That's excellent. That's excellent. And thinking back on that first presentation you made in that class, from an outsider looking in, who's spoken to many professional service tax accounting firms, needless to say, your dad was a unicorn and was a bit ahead of his time, and a lot of those things that he was bringing into market that later would follow by virtue of other firms. So I think he very much was a pioneer in a lot of what he was doing in the previous firm. I have to ask this when I have a second gen, in the room is, I think a lot of times people make assumptions when there's two generations at play. Jenny, what's an assumption that people you think make about the next generation in a founder-led firm that doesn't really hold true? What are some things? Have you run into that? And if so, talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, I would say I'm very fortunate. I haven't really run into it, at least not personally, but I know second generations, it depends. I have clients that are second generation. I have, I know businesses that are second generation, and the next generation is around my age. And sometimes, I think it's just very much dependent on the person. So I know sometimes people get nervous, they feel like they're being handed something. Or, this person, they're not ready for this. And, but because they're the second generation, they're the owner's children or owner's relatives or close family friends, they make the transition. So I would say a misconception sometimes, I would imagine, at least what I run into, not so much with myself, but that the second generation isn't, they just got handed, they didn't work for it, which isn't always the case, obviously. You put the time and hours. I have battle scars to prove it. I know other people do as well. So I feel like that's one misconception. And obviously, my generation, the millennials, I think a lot of people think the millennial generation is known to be lazy, which I disagree with, based on the millennials I know. But I would say the misconception is a lot of people think second generation, owned businesses, they're handed something. If anything, I feel like at least me personally, I have to work twice as hard to prove, that to, I guess, go against that misconception and prove like,
Totally.
nope, I have every right to be here. I earned this and I'm working for it. So that's kind of at least what I've experienced.
Well, it's usually pretty easy to spot a business where that's a multi-generation, where that's not true of the second generation. They're out of business. Because
Yeah, that is
usually,
true. Yeah.
if they take that approach, they're not going to stick around for long. That's for sure. So by virtue of just talking with the two of you together, I could tell there's a lot of just inherent alignment in how you think and how you function and how you view the business. So talk to me for a minute about what happens when there's not. How do the two of you, like when you don't see eye to eye, how do you manage conflict in partnership? You can take that one, Mitch, if you want.
What I try to do is not react. And we do talk about what the issues are, and I try with some success, not 100% success, to make it kind of matter of fact. When I need to say something. The other thing is I guess that my default is to not say anything. Because somebody told me, as this was happening when I sold the prior firm, he said, "You know what? Go on vacation for 3 months." Now that don't say anything unless the house is on fire. So I thought about that, and not that I follow that 100%, but I think that's pretty valid. So I try not to be overly involved, and I think I'm doing okay with that because I haven't gotten any, dirty looks. Well, not too many. Side eye, whatever. And I think Jenny will come to me with questions as much as I go to her with thoughts. Seems to be more in balance that way.
Nice. Jenny, would you say, from your perspective, fairly good assessment of how the two you work.
Yeah, I would say in the beginning, obviously being new into this role, he would say something to me and I would be like, "What are you talking about?" and get all defensive. But I know I don't know everything. I know this is, I'm learning my way into this role, and now I've changed it in my head where I'm seeing it more as he's my advisor and he's saying, "Hey, you need to look at this." And I'm like, "Oh my God, thank you for bringing that up to me or bringing that to my attention." Especially obviously at the time of filming this, we're in tax season. So him saying, "Hey, don't forget, look at this," it's been helping. So I definitely think we've gotten through conflict and we pretty much see eye to eye on most things. We might think of things differently, but we're very open, very non-judgmental with each other. We have a lot of mutual love and respect for each other, so it does help with whenever we have a disagreement or we don't see eye to eye, trying to take it slow and really make sure we understand where the other person's coming from.
That's terrific. Because if my dad were still here, I'd pull him in the room right now and say, "Dad, can't we be more like them?" But we're Italian, so we like to fight, and we fight hard and we hug it out hard, and that's just how we roll. But that's wonderful. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine with the rapid growth, but the Sharp Group is still a relatively young brand. So and you're a young brand in what some might say is a fairly crowded, the greater accounting marketplace. So how are you thinking about and going about differentiating from the competition? How are you looking to stand out and say, "No, there's a lot of firms out there. Here's how we're different."
Yeah, I think it's funny when we started the Sharp Group, the first joke I made to Mitch when we made the decision to do it, I was like, all firms our size are getting bought out by private equity or larger firms, and we're the geniuses that said, "Hey, let's start one. Let's start a firm." And we wouldn't have made this decision if we didn't feel very passionate about, like what Mitch said, very passionate and committed, but also knowing that there's a need for our services. I'm very transparent with people, especially when people ask about us. We're not for everyone, and I understand that. Some people don't want the level of service we provide, and totally fine. But what we offer that other firms don't do is we genuinely care, and I'm not saying other people don't, but we're very, very high touch, very, very hands-on. So like example, I had something come up on a new client. We're playing cleanup on their books, and instead of just like shooting emails back forth, I was like, I picked up the phone. I called one of the owners, and I was like, "Can I just come to your office and sit with you for like 2 hours and let's get through this?" And he was like, "Oh my God, this is amazing. Just you coming here is so helpful." And they were able to ask me other questions. I was there, so we really do, go above and beyond for our clients. And I'm not saying everyone says all the firms like client service is our number one priority. My background is, I've been at a couple firms. This is my third accounting firm, and I know for a fact that we actually do what we say we do. And some people don't believe us when they're meeting us for the first time, and that's why we're very grateful to our current clients that are happy to speak with any prospective clients to say, nope, they're not lying. Like, this is really, they are not exaggerating. This is what they do. But I think as the world is becoming more automated, more AI focused, more we don't want to talk to humans, we want to be on cell phones and texting and stuff like that. Having a human you can go come to, whether it's like text, email, or I show up or Mitch shows up at your office in an age where the AI and the Zoom is taking over the world, having a firm that can offer those things, it's starting to become more unique.
And that's great that you still bring that human touch, and I think that is still warranted and merited and important. Speaking of, Mitch, you have a standing reputation as just being a great connector of people. How important has relationship capital been in building both, say, the original firm, but also this one from its origins?
Well, I think it has had an impact for sure. But like anything else, I think it you got to do it in the right spirit. And I'm somewhat careful about who I connect And but not to the extreme where if it's not going to be an incredibly perfect fit, then I'm not going to make the introduction. What I do is I talk to the parties and say, listen, you might want to spend a little time with this person. Here's the story. Up to you. And I think people appreciate that, that I'm trying to be mindful of everybody's time. I do try to teach people to be more open-minded in a way, in the sense that if this, I don't necessarily just want to introduce you to a prospective customer, but how about someone who shares your values and is an influencer? That type of mentality. And I think I've opened some people's eyes because of that. And I enjoy that, I enjoy putting people with similar values together. Again, sort of making sure upfront that they are open to it. And of course, that has, and I don't know how you measure it, I don't think about it a lot, but that certainly doesn't hurt our brand, our footprint, et cetera, et cetera. For most of my career, I've done no marketing, selling, promoting. It's all been word of mouth. It still kind of is now, although we're about to, launch. Well, we have started launching the marketing end of things so that, people, because when, years ago, I'm going to say, I want to get on your website and look. And I didn't have a website because we were so busy by word of mouth. Eventually, I said, I think I better get a website for credibility. So now where we are is on the marketing side, we have a really great marketing person who's going to be watching this, but she shall remain nameless. We haven't turned her loose yet because we're so young and have such. Had so much incoming work that we said you can't, build the foundation, but you can't do too much too fast because we're going to get crushed. And by the way, while you're at it, think about your marketing, and extend it into recruiting because we need recruiting here. So that's happening. We are definitely very fortunate. The other thing that I'll mention, Jenny alluded to, is that, years ago when I was doing what I was doing, it was mainly because, again, whatever you want to call it, passion or, just finding that, it sounds so cliched, I know, wanting to really make a difference in people's lives and all that, but we actually did the behavior. What's interesting now is that it's decades later, and what I'm going to say is that is not necessarily the way the industry, our profession is going. Because of mergers and acquisitions and AI, there is probably less real contact that there was in the past. So it's sort of at least somewhat, I'm really guessing, I don't have data, but my gut is telling me we're becoming more of a unicorn, not less. There's not that many firms left our size. And there's certainly, I don't believe there's many firms that really have our commitment to what we do and how we do it. I think we're more of a unicorn than ever, to be honest with you. And I've shared that with Jenny and said, these are interesting times. So we do want to get our marketing game up, and yeah, we're building the platform, we're starting to do it, et cetera, et cetera. After we get through this tax season, I guess, and some key hires, we're gonna turn Karen loose for real. I know she's like, hey, come on. She's just passionate about being out there telling our story. And I've been kind of saying, well, not too much. And we'll get there. And then that's going to be really a lot of fun and really interesting when we just turn that part of ourselves loose.
So, If we can kind of dwell on that a little bit more, when clients choose the Sharpe Group, and I'll extend that out to when talent says, "I'd like to put, my career with the Sharpe Group," what do you think they're really buying or buying into beyond, say, technical expertise? Jenny, what do you think? What are they when they come say, "I want to be part of the Sharpe Group," whether as a client or as to work with you or for you, what are they buying into?
So I would say on the recruiting side, or for like employees or staff, we are very unique. We genuinely deeply care about our people. I know everyone says that, but we're very much the type of firm that we rather stay ahead of the curve and, overhire slightly, because we really believe in not killing our people in tax season with hours and billable hour requirements. So we've been pretty, pretty good at pacing that and watching it and being very cognizant of people's time, and making sure they feel appreciated. We're pretty flexible. We're in the office, 4 days a week, and we're out at clients and whatnot, and then we work remote on Fridays. So we try to, after COVID, the post-COVID world of the flexibility, most of our staff right now are working moms. So we are very cognizant of people's, outside priorities, but we also know that our people are very committed to our clients. So that's one thing we will offer, the flexibility and
Balance.
yeah.
Balance.
Yeah.
And that's a great in fact, we still maintain similar to you since COVID, one day remote every week. We do it on Wednesday, not Friday. And then in the summertime, we flip it to 4 days remote, one day in for 2 months.
Oh, wow. That's
And
awesome.
yeah, most of the our industry has gone back to, fully back on site, and we've maintained
Yeah.
that. And I can honestly say, like, the blizzard that just blew through New Jersey, hey, we're remote and everybody knows what to do. So it keeps us incredibly agile. And I
Yeah.
like that because we didn't miss a beat. We didn't say, oh gosh, what are we going to do? And who has what fought? No, we are all plugged in. We're going to work just remote, and it's a regular day. So that's pretty awesome. And I'm glad that you that's a great I think a lot of people would, especially those who have young ones around or looking after or caring for others, whatever capacity, probably really appreciate that flexibility. So I think that's great.
Yeah, I would say, and like, because we are a family like owned and run business, like, I think it's important that we have those family values. They're part of our company, so we really do value our staff and our employees' personal time. We want to make sure they're with their families and they see their family, especially in tax season. So we value that. And then on the flip side, I guess, for prospective clients and what can they get, what would they experience coming and working with the Sharpe Group? It's almost a similar experience. When we take you on as a client, you kind of become, I wouldn't say like one of our own in our family, but it's almost like that. Like, I've gotten to the point in my career, obviously it's something being newer in my career, and as something Mitch always tells me, you have to like keep in the back of your mind, you can help and you can care, but you're not ultimately responsible for how the company, a client's company runs, because we genuinely care that much. So I have to remind myself, I can give advice and I can help my clients weather the storm of whether it's staffing issues or collection issues or growth issues. And I'm really there for them. I have clients that call me 24/7. I mean it when I say that. Like, we are on 24/7. Clients call. Sometimes I'll call them to check in. I haven't heard from you. Just want to make sure you're okay. I know you're working on this, or I know this is an issue. So you really become like a part of our circle and our network. And, we really genuinely care about them, and we want to see them succeed. So that passion and commitment, you'll get that from us.
And it comes through very authentically from your words and Mitch's words. So I think you 100%, but there's a conviction in your words that I think probably resonates when people talk with you both. So bringing this back around to the family governed business to business organization, and I'll ask you this one to you, Mitch. So a lot of times what they're looking for is continuity of prosperity. They want to ensure that the business has longevity, that it's sustaining through all different conditions. And a lot of times what they're concerned about are what I'll call blind spots. So from your vantage point, what are some of the common blind spots that might show up either in a transitional phase where one generation is transitioning to the next, or maybe through a growth phase where the organization is experiencing rapid growth and maybe is getting out ahead of its skis a little bit in terms of its readiness for that growth. So what are some things that you see that are like, hey, there's some
Well,
things to watch for?
we do get a lot of referrals for people because they recognize that it's a challenge. And the blind spots are going to be I'm thinking it could be any number of things, but certainly one thing in a two-generation family is, are the generations going to be capable of working together effectively? And how are you going to know that? How do you measure it? How do you keep track of that and keep the conversation alive if it needs to be? That's one thing that's very important. I've certainly seen several times, and it's probably almost a cliche, where the first generation turns the company over to the second generation because why not? And my answer, my question, I guess, would be, well, no, we have to ask, why would you do this? Because, you're talk about the difference in temperament, skill set, commitment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That conversation should be had. That's very, very important if we're talking about transitioning between generations. And I've seen people do it right, maybe do it not so good. I've learned from that. I try to bring that to clients when it's appropriate. When people are scaling up, boy, we need a whole another conversation about that. But let me see if I can give you a 30-second version.
Oh, well, I see blind spots, obviously, to protect certain things. Sometimes people don't think to,
Well, a lot of times people, in a you have a combination of they know enough to be concerned, hopefully. Some don't. We're just going to grow and it's going to be great. And what could go wrong? For whatever reason is, they don't have the perspective or experience, whatever it is. And some people know a lot of times we get called because, say, we want to take this company to the next level. We're already a little bit shaky with our procedures and everything. We know we're not getting the service we need, but we want to make the change now because now we really have to make the change because we want to go to the next level. The things that we will talk to them about in scaling up is some basic stuff around HR. Do you have an org chart? Do you have job descriptions? Do you have accountability? Do people really know what's expected of them? So there's that people side of it, which is one of the tougher parts, frankly. And then there's the things like, well, as you're scaling up, a lot of times we will start up with a client who's doing well, so they don't have a lot of liabilities. They run their business well, but now they want to ramp up consciously. But one of the first things I'll say is, well, we got to talk to a bank about a line of credit. And a lot of times the answer comes back to me, well, we don't need a lot of credit. And of course, my response is, we don't need a lot of credit now. We want to get it when we don't need it. Because if you need it, it's a lot harder to get
Oh,
it.
sure. Yeah.
So that's an example of a specific thing. A lot of people out there, a lot of clients that are becoming profitable, they don't know about all the tax credits available.
I think tax credits and not even that, tax structuring.
Structure
Like
too,
we have sometimes, like we'll see clients that are C corps. Why? Why are you a C corp? Or like they're a single member LLC. Why aren't you an S corp? Like the things like that. As you grow, you have to think about tax credits, as Mitch says, but also your tax structure and how you are as a company and cash flow and all that stuff. That will,
Another blind
blind
spot
spot.
would be the business finances. As you're growing, it's really important to know your numbers, accurate, real numbers on a very timely basis, so that things don't get out of control. And so we'll be watching things for clients like, what's your accounts receivable aging look like today? What did it look like 3 months ago? What's the difference? Is it a good trend or a bad trend? What as you're hiring people, do you know how that fits into your budget? And if you're hiring people in sort of in advance, do you have the capital in your companies to sustain it? Are you sure? How much? How long? What's that calculation look like? That's a potential blind spot. What else?
Well, I was going to say a big thing, what we're starting to experience with certain clients that are having major growth is getting with, especially in New Jersey with the state laws, getting the business out of the owner's name and putting it into a trust. Or some kind of planning for that. So if you're really growing to the point where there's all these, you might not even think about that. You know, why would you even think about that? I'm just trying to grow and keep the wheels turning. And so that's stuff that we'll bring up, protecting the client personally and their family and their personal assets, but also the company. So we'll make sure
Another big
that's,
part, exit planning and personal financial planning. One of the, it's not the first thing I talk about with a new client, but shortly after that, I'll say, so what's the plan? And you'd be surprised or not how many people really don't have a plan. Well, I've kind of been doing a little bit into my 401k every year for the last 6 years. Okay, well, let's talk about things like when would you like to have the option to not have to work for financial reasons? What's your lifestyle look like now? What do you think it's going to be? Let's do the math, reverse engineer it, and talk about how much do you have to put away each month to get there? And some folks, I did this 30 years ago, and everybody's smiling because, wow, you put it on automatic pilot, right? Not that it's always that simple to make that payment for yourself. It's to pay yourself first. But I certainly worked with a number of clients for decades, and you know what? Pretty much every one of them, in one way or another, said, "I'm really glad we had that talk, because now there's $2 million there, or $4 million there, or whatever the number is, which somehow wouldn't have been there. It's just the way life happens." And that's been something that like I said, one of the first things I look at, and that's certainly one of the things that gives you satisfaction. When now I get satisfaction in advance, though, because if I have a new client and I have a client now that we put them, he had great business, no money put aside. And I said, well, you can afford to take X number of dollars every month and put that away into this. And he said, wow, yeah, that's really would be good. Can you, and basically, this is the nature of our relationship with clients. He said, can you make that happen for me? Yes, I will make that happen for you. So now he's got a fair amount of money each month, dollar cost averaging into some investment portfolios. So when it comes time to retire, the objective that I have is when it comes time to retire, you kind of be a little bit smug about it and say, wow, we did good. Look what we did. Look what we put away. And I always like to say, in most cases, let's try and make that the sale of the business is gravy. It's not like that's what you're relying on for your retirement, because anything can happen.
A lot of them do that, unfortunately.
Oh,
And
yeah. Well, how are you going to
usually
retire?
with
Well, I'm going to
a,
sell my business. Well, what's your business worth? Oh, it's got to be millions.
yeah. And
Sure.
also for they also don't really factor in, especially if it's a largely owner dependent in those cases, they're not going to get the multiple that they read about in the news.
Right.
The infamous 8 to 10x. No, not with an owner dependent business. That doesn't happen unless that owner's tied to it to in perpetuity, but that also
Yeah,
doesn't happen. So
exactly. And that's
yeah.
the kind of conversations we have with our clients routinely. Even, I have a client that's been in business, I think it's 8 years. He's a client for a year and a half or two. He's in his 40s. And we're already having this whole conversation about exit strategy and multiples and et cetera, et cetera. But in the meantime, I'm saying, yeah, this is all fine that we're doing this, but here's what we need to do every month. X number of dollars because stuff happens.
And that's great input. So, looking out to the future, and I'll pose this one to Jenny, but if we said, hey, 10 years from now, what would make you kind of look back and say, yeah, we did this right?
Yeah, I would say for us, I would say employees, definitely employee retention and growth and making the Sharp Group a place for, CPAs and accountants to want to work and be excited to work and not feel burnt out. So I would say having great staff and great re retention and a great team. In 10 years, for me, I would feel that's very successful. I enjoy helping business owners, as I mentioned, I'm very passionate about it, and having, a lot of business owners as clients that were, helping and planning and seeing them grow and seeing them hit those goals that Mitch just spoke about and, helping them along that journey. I would say for me, in 10 years, as that happens, like for me, that's success and that would make me thrilled. So that's what I'm hoping for in the future and, continuing this journey.
Wonderful, wonderful. Last question. If any of our listeners wanted to learn more about either one of you or learn more about the Sharp Group, what's the best way for them to connect, Jenny?
Yeah, so I would say our website, sharpgroupnj.com, Instagram, sharpgroupnj. Those are, I would say, two big places. We also are on LinkedIn, the Sharp Group. And feel free to connect with Mitch or myself, and that's where you can find more information about our firm and what we've been up to. And yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, family business, it's not just about succession, it's about evolution. It's about having the courage to refine what worked, release what no longer serves, and build intentionally for the next chapter. So, Mitch, Jenny, I want to thank you for sharing your journey, your perspectives on growth, leadership, and legacy. Again, we've been speaking with Mitch Sharp and Jenny Sharp of the Sharp Group, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Mitch, Jenny, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.dalianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at dalianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.